Go to half a dozen churches in the United States and you'll come away with a half a dozen worship experiences. So just exactly what should the proper worship, quote unquote, experience really be? Well, God's laid it out for us in His Word. All we have to do is take a look at it, which is what we'll do today on Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris Gordon. Welcome to our program. Join us in Exodus 24. Verses 1 through 18. The message is called Worship from Afar, and it is the first call to worship that we have recorded for us here in Exodus as the Israelites leave Egypt. Join us for today's broadcast of Abounding Grace. Here's Pastor Chris.
Then he said to Moses, "Come up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and worship from afar. Moses alone shall come near to the Lord, but the others shall not come near, and the people shall not come up with him." Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the rules, and all the people answered with one voice and said, "All the words that the Lord has spoken we will do." And Moses wrote down all the words of the Lord. He rose early in the morning and built an altar at the foot of the mountain, and 12 pillars according to the 12 tribes of Israel. And he sent young men of the people of Israel who offered burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings of oxen to the Lord. And Moses took half of the blood and put it in basins, and half of the blood he threw against the altar. Then he took the blood of the covenant and read it in the hearing of the people. And they said, "All that the Lord has spoken, we will do, and we will be obedient." And Moses took the blood and threw it on the people and said, "Behold, the blood of the covenant that the Lord has made with you in accordance with all these words." Then Moses and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel went up, and they saw the God of Israel. There was under his feet, as it were, a pavement of sapphire stone, like the very heaven for clearness. And he did not lay his hand on the chief men of the people of Israel. They beheld God and ate and drank. The Lord said to Moses, "Come up to me on the mountain and wait there, that I may give you the tablets of stone with the law and the commandment which I have written for their instruction." So Moses rose with his assistant Joshua, and Moses went up into the mountain of God. And he said to the elders, "Wait here for us until we return to you. And behold, Aaron and Hur are with you. Whoever has a dispute, let him go to them." Then Moses went up on the mountain, and the cloud covered the mountain. The glory of the Lord dwelt on Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it 6 days. And on the seventh day, he called to Moses out of the midst of the cloud. Now the appearance of the glory of the Lord was like a devouring fire on the top of the mountain in the sight of the people of Israel. Moses entered the cloud and went up on the mountain. And Moses was on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. May the Lord bless the hearing of his word. Well, in order to make some kind of tie to this morning's message that it's not about us, I thought about reading here in Exodus chapter 24 that part of the denial of ourselves will take a serious into account, a serious consideration of how we restrain ourselves and our behavior before the holy God of Israel. There really is no place more important to emphasize that than in the act itself of worship. And you'll see that that's what this is all about tonight. You'll notice in verse 1 that he said to Moses, "Come up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and the 70 elders of Israel, and you shall worship." This is a worship service. In fact, this is the first worship service with any amount of detail and instruction on what true worship looks like in the Bible. I find that very fascinating, that if we're going to talk about worship, we should go back and look at what worship was originally meant to be, what it looked like, what was included in it, those sort of things. And I'm curious what that service looked like, aren't you? What did they do in worship? I want to know what elements they had in it. Are we doing something today that just needs more variety? Is there any continuity? What do we do with Old Testament worship, and how does that apply to New Testament worship? These are important questions. I want to know the kind of worship, of course, that pleases God, because the issue in Exodus is the Israelites have yet to have their hearts dealt with. In other words, they have not understood a lot about themselves. And most certainly worship should come from a sincere and a changed heart. But if the heart is simultaneously an idol factory, then the heart has to be cleansed, doesn't it, to become proper worshipers. It's a big issue in the Old Testament, the issue of the heart. Circumcise your heart. All circumcise your heart. The heart has to be dealt with to be a true worship, to be a true worshiper. And this is really important when considering why God was protecting his worship, lest people try to invent a way to get to him apart from the cleansing that they need in order to come into his presence. And I believe going back to the Old Testament again is vital today, because we can't even understand what worship is. This is one of the greatest things. It has to be, in some ways, go back to square one and ask, what is worship? What did they do in worship? What did worship look like? And what makes worship even possible? And that's what the book of Exodus particularly is teaching us. What did the Lord want done in worship that reverenced him in holiness? And I hope by the time we're done tonight, in the short time we have, we've answered what makes worship possible and what worship should be like for us in the new covenant, who live in the fulfillment of what is foreshadowed here, which is very important. Exodus 24, here they are, you'll notice, have come to the mountain of the Lord, and as this happens, the Lord calls the leaders of Israel up into the mountain for a worship service. You'll notice this here in verse 1. Now he said to Moses, "Come up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and 70 elders of Israel, and worship from afar." Now, if you break this down, which I think is kind of interesting to do, I think you'll be surprised that the worship of the old covenant is not so different in many of the elements from the worship of the new. The first thing you'll notice here is you have a sort of call to worship, don't you? You're going to see that what we are doing here in Exodus 24 and what we are doing tonight in worship and as people who come before the throne of grace, as we say, and worship the Lord, what the difference is, understanding now what it is and what it means to be in his presence in fulfillment now that Jesus Christ has, as we considered in the Heidelberg, fulfilled all righteousness. But this helps us to have some kind of appreciation for what we do, why we do it. And you'll notice here that the Lord himself calls them and summons them to worship. Come up to the Lord. Notice what he instructed, though. There should be something that stood out to you. Come up to worship. No, not entirely. Come up to worship, but stay really far away. Now, there's a tension that's being presented to you in the book of Exodus, a really important one. Stay far away. So the worship of the Old Testament, you'll notice here, is intentionally having the effect, as we read it and study it, to say, wow, they really had to stay far away from God. Why couldn't they get to God? Why is their worship at such a distance? Worship from afar, which I've picked up in the title tonight. And that's a tension, and that really is the sort of struggle that is presented to us in the book of Exodus. Moses and the Lord, remember, had this dialogue and discussion back in chapter 3, and at the golden calf event, there was the threat that the Lord would no longer be among them. How could the holy God of Israel dwell among his people and not consume them? I mean, that's the big question. How could the holy God of Israel come down and do this? And so we have this problem here that we're noticing here. God had said his intention in the Exodus, remember when Moses went to Pharaoh, let us out that we may go 3 days into the wilderness and worship. This is what the Lord wants us to do. This is the goal of Him redeeming us. The goal here is that we would be a worshiping people. But the tension of Exodus is, and notice how scary this is, they start to fulfill the very purpose, and all of a sudden, it's as if bounds go up, and the yellow tape and the markers are put up, and it says, stay far away. Don't get too close. Don't even touch the mountain. Remember that? I think we forget what this first worship service in the Bible was like. Remember 19. Now Mount Sinai was completely in smoke because the Lord descended upon it in fire. Its smoke ascended like the smoke of a furnace. The whole mountain quaked greatly. And when the blast of the trumpet sounded long, it became louder and louder. Moses spoke and God answered him by voice. Then the Lord came down on Mount Sinai on the top of the mountain. And the Lord called Moses to the top of the mountain and Moses went up. You correlate that with the book of Hebrews. Remember, it says Moses was deathly afraid of this whole experience. This was one wow worship experience, let me tell you. They were absolutely terrified. So understand what's going on right now. The whole thing is black. The whole mountain is on fire. The Lord himself is on fire. That's why the mountain is lit up. The smoke has provided a sort of canopy around the mountain so that no one can see God, lest his glory breaks out and consumes all of them. That's always the emphasis. Even when Isaiah saw a glimpse of the glory of God, the first thing he did was drop and say, woe is me, calling down prophetic curses on himself. I am unclean, and I dwell amidst those who are unclean. The holiness of God was the first great thing people realized in worship. There was no asking what we go get to do. You ducked and you covered. I'm going to come back to this about New Covenant worship in a minute. You'll notice here that as this goes on, this terrifying sight, the Lord calls them to worship, but he only lets one go up in, really. Moses. Verse 2. And Moses alone shall come near the Lord, but they shall not come near, nor shall the people go up with him. All of us should be realizing, for instance, in the call to worship tonight, I said, therefore, since you have boldness to come, that in the old covenant, they had no boldness to come, and they did not have direct access to God. They didn't. That's the clear thing that verse 2 is telling us, but that the only pathway to God would be through a mediator. Now you'll see the Heidelberg ties into this and how important what we believe as a go-between and a mediator, who that must be and why the Bible is teaching us throughout this important need for us to come into the presence of a holy God. No one barged into the presence. No one said, I just want to see God. Everyone saw the sign. Come, but stay away. Now, I think it's important to remember that there were a few moments of enthusiasm in Israel's history where they forgot this. It's interesting that two names are mentioned here that get to go partway there, you'll notice, to come up, but were kept still far away, and those names are Nadab and Abihu. You know who they are. They were the sons of Aaron. Do you know what happened to them? This was Leviticus 10. Then Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, each took his censer and put fire in it. This was a worship service later on. Put incense on it and offered a profane fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. So fire went out from the Lord and devoured them, and they died before the Lord. And listen to this. And Moses said to Aaron, now this is Dad at this point. This is what the Lord spoke. You didn't listen. We didn't take this seriously. This is what the Lord spoke by saying, by those who come near me, I must be regarded as holy. And before all the people, I must be glorified. Don't you even cry, Aaron, said Moses, for your sons. They weren't having worship debates. This didn't go on. I promise you. This was scary stuff to mess with the God of Israel. You didn't mess with him. He'll consume you in a moment. And it happened. It happened. Uzzah, remember, touched the ark because God told him not to. It happened. Now, I'm going to deal with this lingering thought that in the New Testament we get to do what we want, but let me get there. Here's where the old is different. What is Moses mediating? It's an important question. And the answer's not that hard. The law. You'll remember the book of Galatians says it was appointed through the angels by the hands of a mediator. This is why worship was far away. So there was this call to worship that happened. And then the next thing after the call to worship is Moses begins to, now does this sound familiar? Read the law. Verse 3, so Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the judgments. Second element of worship. You'll notice the emphasis here on the word. These were the 10 words. And then it says all the judgments. So it was really two parts to this. The first was understood to be the 10 words, that he read the 10 words of the Lord. And the second, the judgments from Exodus 19 to 24 in this law covenant, these civil codes that were unpacked for Israel and how they were to live and to be as God's special people in the earth. So Moses is now standing up in front of the people, reading the terms of the covenant to them. And you'll notice in verse 7 that he takes the name of the book of the covenant to make clear that this was the whole series of commandments from 19 to 24 when God descended on Sinai in smoke. It was a law covenant. Verse 4 tells us Moses wrote all the words of the Lord. This is how covenants were made. The words were written down. They couldn't be changed. And each party would agree to live by them. And they were to honor the conditions of the covenant. So what did God want them to do? Well, notice what the Lord told Moses to do. You call them to worship, and then you read my terms. Here are my terms. And you'll notice here that they were actually read twice. They had two law readings. But I want you to notice what happened. So Moses came, verse 3, in chapter 24, and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the rules. And all the people answered with one voice and said, all the words that the Lord has spoken, we will do. And Moses wrote all the words of the Lord. Something was just ratified. Something just happened. The covenant was made, ratified. Oaths were being sworn. Who's swearing the oath? Israel. Now listen to this. All the words of the Lord, we will do. And then Moses, for emphasis, not only says that twice, but then he says that they say, and we will be obedient. Now, a good test for the boys and girls. Do we do that at this point in worship? When the law is read? What do? Something quite different. But I'll come back to that too. New Testament writers would look at this particular phenomenon that was going on in Exodus chapter 24, and they would describe this as the administration of the giving of the law. But Galatians would capture this in a very specific way when they looked at this entire phenomenon, and they would say, listen, for as many as are of the works of the law are under its curse, for it's written, cursed is everyone who does not continue to do everything written in the book of the law to do them. They just said, we'll do them all. Galatians says, you're cursed if you don't do it all. This is a problem. Man, this is a big problem. But that no one is justified by the law in the sight of God is evident, for the just shall live by faith. Yet the law is not of faith, but the man who does them shall live by them. Paul understood the objection to this, that when he said, well, what then is the purpose of the law? If the law was unable to bring about our righteousness, what good was it? And Paul says, well, what purpose did the law serve? It was added for transgressions. It was added to make something very clear. It was supposed to awaken a sense of people's guilt, awaken a sense of people's need. Have you seen that with Israel? Nope. Not at all. No sense of sin. No sense of who they were coming before. And I'm going to show you what that lack of reverence of God did to their worship in a little bit. They held up a calf, and they had the best music and the best idolatry you could ever make. And it got downright nasty at the mountain. This is why Paul would say the law kills and the law brings wrath. So important. And what Israel had not learned yet was the severity of their problem of their own hearts. And that's the key to all true worship, beginning right here, first of all. It is the great problem of our hearts. We will do it all. You know, in two sermons from now, we come to the rich young ruler. What happened with that? Man comes up, doesn't ask for salvation, by the way. He asks for eternal life. Big distinction. When you ask for salvation in the New Testament and in the Gospels and in Acts, you always got the message, believe on the Lord Jesus Christ and you'll be saved. But when you ask for eternal life, Romans 2, Mark 10, you got the law. Here's the standard. Do this and live. And remember what the rich young ruler said? Someone walked up to me this morning. I can't wait till you get to the rich young ruler. Do you know what he said to Jesus? Jesus, I've done it all. Now that's a lingering problem in the church, isn't it? I've done it. Here's this Israel's great problem. It's the problem of the human heart. We can do this. We'll step up to this, man. So here we are, worship. The law has been read. A pledge of obedience has been made. The next morning, Moses gets up, builds an altar at the foot of the mountain. 12 pillars, according to the 12 tribes of Israel. He sends the young men of children of Israel who offered up burnt offerings and sacrifices and peace offerings of oxen to the Lord. And you'll notice here, remember what the Heidelberg said tonight, that in the ceremonies of the law that the gospel was being proclaimed, you'll remember these offerings from chapter 20. There was the burnt offering, was the sacrifice of atonement. It spoke of atonement made by blood for sin. So an animal was placed on the altar by the hands of the mediator. The smoke would rise up to God, and the worshipers would place their hands later on the head of the animal, showing they identified with what was happening, and the animal was being offered up in their place. They would sprinkle the blood then on the altar, teaching them that atonement needed to be made. So alongside all of this, atonement needed to be made. And then you'll notice here, he emphasizes the fellowship offering, which was called the peace offering, and reminded the people they needed to be reconciled to God. Now, big picture in worship. Call to worship, reading of the law, and then two offerings right after the reading of the law, which was really a kind of declaration of a way of pardon, wasn't it?
And this is Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Closing out today's program, we invite you to contact us. Maybe you have a question, comment about the program. Maybe you'd like to listen to the broadcast again. Any reason at all, we'd love to hear from you, even if it's just a quick praise report saying thanks for the program. That means a great deal to us. You reach out to us at agradio.org or call 888-504-8805. Now, bear in mind, as you visit us online, again, agradio.org, that'll also provide a great jumping-off point to the other platforms that we're available on, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Again, you can jump off to any of those platforms through our website, agradio.org. If you do have a question you would like Pastor Chris to address here on the program, we would invite you to use your voice memo app on your smartphone. Record your question, your name, and where you're calling from, and then email it to us, questions@agradio.org. If we use your question on the air, we'll email you back and let you know when the program airs, so you'll be able to listen to Pastor Chris's answer again right here on Abounding Grace Radio. And then finally, as we conclude our time today, a quick reminder that this radio broadcast airs on this station you're listening to because friends of the ministry come alongside of us prayerfully and financially. There is a financial cost to making sure that these programs continue to air here on this station. And if you would like to link arms and partner with us, become a part of this family, We would love to hear from you. Again, reach out to us at agradio.org or simply call 888-504-8805. Well, we look forward to seeing you next time we get together. Until then, God bless. Abounding Grace is brought to you on this radio station by Abounding Grace Radio Ministries.
Hi, I'm Chris Gordon, the host of Abounding Grace Radio. I'm also the pastor of the Escondido United Reformed Church. If you are local to Southern California and live near the Escondido area, we would love to see you at one of our worship services on Sunday. We worship at 9:30 a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m. at the Escondido United Reformed Church, 1864 North Broadway here in Escondido. You can find us on the web at www.escondidourc.org. EscondidoURC.org. The Escondido United Reformed Church, a place where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught.